My name is Ronnie, and I'm a great recovering addict. You know, it was kind of odd about this thing, because a friend of mine asked me the other day. He said, look, if you come up to Ocean City, I might need you to do a meeting. Can I depend on you if I need you? Now, today, my day has been all right. I had some fellowship with some people and had fun. And I'm walking through the lobby on my way to the comedy show. He said, I need you. So I said, okay, what you need? He said, I need you to do this meeting. I said, not a problem. He said, but it's prejudice to unity. And I started laughing, right? I said, why me? And he said, man, ain't nothing out of order. Then I get in here and a brother of mine tell me ain't nothing out of order. This thing, prejudice, was embedded in me when I was a little kid. I'm going to take you from the outside, I'm going to bring you into the fellowship. You understand? I grew up in this town, and my mama was a maid. She used to carry me to work with her. And the people, and this is my story, this is how I got from one point to another. She worked for white people. And they used to feed us, give us a little food, sit me off in the corner, and I'd watch my mother clean these people's houses. I watched my mother take abuse from them white people's kids. Do this, do that. And she would just go around and do it. I didn't like it, so I carried a hatred. Talking about being prejudiced. I didn't understand it, but I wanted to get back at somebody. I went to school with white kids. I was never that smart. I never knew how I ended up in the damn school. You understand? I didn't know. But it was who my people knew, by working for those people, that gave me a shot at a little better education. So I'm in these schools with these people, trying to identify in, and not knowing that I don't fit. I got jumped on one day about a couple of them white boys, and they beat me down with that N-word. And I wonder, why y'all do this to me? I ain't done nothing to y'all. So I immediately got hatred. I started swinging with the brothers. They started beating them down. I was right in with the mix. All my life, I carried that. I always felt that I had nothing to offer these people, and I couldn't understand why these people would beat and do what they were doing to my people. I went into service, and I became the man that I wanted to be. I wanted to stand up to them when they see me, be able to step aside. But see, Sam has a way of doing things, whether you want to do it or not. He put me together with him. I couldn't identify, so I went to be a paratrooper. I said, if I jump out of airplanes, I'm going to step ahead of their ass. But they were jumping out of airplanes, too. What I'm talking about is never being all right with Ronnie. Never forgot how them people treated me. Now, my prejudice not only go with these white people, but I don't like Spanish people either. I don't like Chinese people. I don't like half of y'all. You understand what I'm talking about? The disease. It stopped having a color. It was just something that I had to deal with. I went to Vietnam and I dealt with what I had to deal with. And what happened was I met a white dude. And me and him became brothers. And I asked him one day, I said, you know what, man? I said, it's going to be hell when we get back to the States. I said, because you ain't going to change. You're going to go back to being the way you was. And you know I'm going back to my brothers. And he simply told me one day, he said, I look at you, man, I don't see color. He said, what I see is a brother. Now, the reason he said that was because he and I was in the same situation as being infantrymen, killing people, getting shot at. He got shot a couple of times. I got banged up a couple of times. So what I had bonded with him was that I always got your back. But I made a pact. If you ever cross me, that friendship shit is out the window. I told him just like that. Because I felt in my heart he could never treat me like a man. If he did, his people would castrate him. Turn him out. And I found that to be true. But I was all right with that. Because he was a friend. I seen him take me to his home, and he lived in South Carolina. And I'm going to tell you, at that time, you weren't going nowhere with no black man. But he took me home to his mama. He let me sleep in his bed and his grandmama. And we used dope together, by the way. So when we got dope in us, we damn sure didn't see no color. See, I'm talking about the disease of addiction. See, but yet and still, we both had that thing in us that I was subduing it with drugs. I'd be all right with him as long as we was on. You understand? And he made sure we was on.
Right.
You know, but he took me home with him one day, and he said, man, I want you to spend the night. And he had called his people and told them that we was coming home. Now, he was bringing a friend home. But he had always mentioned me by name, but never told him that I was a black man. We got hooked up in so much dope, we forgot we was black and white.
Okay.
I'm talking about how my disease of addiction was an asset as well as a defect. So I'm home with him, and he tell me, he said, well, I want you to sleep in my sister's room. We've been out partying. I goes get in his sister's bed, pull the cover over my damn head, I'm sleeping. I hear somebody open the door, it's about 3 o'clock in the morning, and it was his grandmama. And she had come from Raleigh to see him, and I heard her say, Jesse? And she went and she pulled the covers. And it wasn't him, it was me.
Right.
And she screamed, a nigga is in my bed.
I know that's right.
And I said, straight up. And I'm looking at her, right? And he broke in the room. He said, no, this is my friend. This is Stud. This is my partner. And I seen them, what I had told him. Everybody ain't ready for this thing. Everybody ain't ready. Oh, he pitched a bitch. He broke up stuff, and he cussed, and he cussed. I said, man, look here. Look, get me up out of here. You understand? I tried to fit in. I sit at his dinner table with his three brothers, and they were definitely not having it. And I'm not bragging or showing you how slick I was, but at that time, I was 21 years old, and I was built like Caesar. I was pumped. He had a sister, and she kept looking at me. And I kept smiling at her. Because the image that I had, if I get that, I'm over. I don't care about nothing else. I want that. But them boys wasn't having that. So I'm sitting there talking to him, and we talked about it, and we got high. And I said, look, man, I got to cut up out of here. And I left. The disease that I suffer from as far as being prejudiced, even now, I have to be careful and vigilant through Narcotics Anonymous that that man can help me. You see, until I got here to find out that it don't make no difference what color when you're using. White eggs, black eggs don't make no difference. We all use the same dope. But what Ronnie had to do was be willing to let these people help me. Again, my God has a sense of humor for a person like me to be standing here talking about prejudice. Because, see, I walk around and tell you I ain't prejudiced. I can handle that shit. But deep down, I can't. I have to be vigilant. I have to pray. And I have to remember, as long as I'm in Narcotics Anonymous, I get another shot at doing something right. You understand? I go into treatment in 1994. I get out of treatment, go to a treatment facility, have a talk with a counselor, and he put me in a room with a white boy. I walk in there and I tell him, I say, just like if I was in jail, you got the bottom. Matter of fact, you take the top, stay off this line. And he looked at me like, man, what the hell are you talking about? You know, I stigmatized him. And it took my prejudice to another level. You stay on that side of the room. Now, he got more time than me, Clint. And he looked at me. He said, man, I'm only here to help you. I could not read well at that time. I smoke a lot of dope, shoot a lot of dope. I do it all. I do it all. My brain was gone. I'm the type of individual that you can, I'm a hands-on man. You know how you tell a dude, say, well, he can't read, but if you show him, he can do it. I made up for not reading by catching on shit. That's how I did it in the street. I ain't know how to shoot dope. First time I put dope in a damn wine bottle cap and put the heat on it, I forgot to take the damn cotton out. I turned the damn top upside down, the dope was gone. I said, man, somebody didn't beat me. The dude said, man, you got to take the cotton out. Now try it. So I'm sitting there on bed one night, faking, in recovery, And he said, you can't read. I said, oh, we're going to move some furniture up in this motherfucker now. You done stepped on my toes. He said, but it ain't nothing to be ashamed about, man. He said, I'm going to help you.
Yeah.
Wasn't nobody in the room but me and him.
Right.
I let my guard down. Because he said he wanted to help me. And again, I'm trusting you people. You see, every time I trust somebody, white, black, Chinese, I always get hurt. And see, that means if you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you. And I found out in my life, if I can't get you, I'm going to get your brother, your sister. So I remember when them white boys beat me up in school. And I see any white person that come in my path going to get that ass whipping that I couldn't get at him. So I'm carrying shit. I'm carrying it. I had to come in this room, and I don't know why you want me to share about my prejudice, maybe because I had to hide it for so long. But if it wasn't for Narcotics Anonymous, I would still be on that turn, on that path of self-destruction. Meaning, I have to learn how to deal with all people. Thank God I'm in Narcotics Anonymous. Because when I sit down with this dude, and he began to show me books, he began to buy me books, and we would sit up every night about an hour before we go to bed, and he would tell me, I'm going to read it, and you follow. And I asked him one day, I said, why are you doing all this for me? And he just looked at me. He said, man, we addicts. And I looked at him. I said, what? He said, we addicts. He said, man, I can't afford not to help you. And he would carry me to meetings. He had me doing meetings in Virginia. And we were buddies. But that stigma stuck in the back of my head. One day he's going to cross you. And when he started telling me where he was shooting dope at, where he was buying dope at, you know what my addict thinking mind said? Why in the hell could not a ran cross you?
Yeah.
God, as many nights I was in that area, as sweet as you was, I'd have been able to handle you. But at that time, he was trying to stay clean. And he was willing to help me stay clean. What I'm talking about, when I came in Narcotics Anonymous, I dropped that prejudice thing. I don't like a lot of shit I hear y'all say. I got caught up in some shit about Virginia and D.C. But I wouldn't feed it because they got to talking about the white addict and the black addict. And I went to my thinking, well, damn, an addict is an addict. So how they going to tell me I can't share the way I want to share? I walk into a meeting, ain't nobody in there but whites. I'm at home. I want to be at home. But it's so powerful, it hits me, and I get scared. Because now I want to go do what I do best. Tear up shit, throw chairs, cuss, act like that thing you call me. Then I hear him say, that's why we don't want them in our meetings. See, but I can't afford to let them and nobody else keep me from what I've gotten over the past 10 years. I don't like a lot of things out here. I don't like a lot of people I work with. And I work with multicolored people. I told you I'm on this tip now. I got the ass with the Chinese. I'm getting ready to get furious with them gathering Arabs. You understand? Needing to do something instead of sitting with Ronnie and keeping the focus on Ronnie. See, because I got kids and grandkids that I don't want coming through the cycle doing what I did. See, and if it takes me to be an addict in order to get in touch with that, to tell my grandkids, that ain't how it's got to be. You see, because I understand now, God got me. You participated in my recovery, but God gave me my recovery. And most of all, he gave me enough sense to participate in it myself. So I don't let you and nobody else run me out of no meetings. You asked me to share about prejudice, I shared. I had fears. Affairs with white women, Chinese women, black women, and I catalyze all women crazy as hell. I don't care what color you is. I don't care. I choose what I want to do when I do it, and if I do it, I participate in it, I get what I get.
Right. That's how that works.
That's what I do. I like to have you as my friend. But I also know as being 57 years old in this life that I've lived for so long, it's hard for me to believe that you really got my, how would I say, you really want to change. Because there's so much shit in both our passes. But as long as I stay in this room, we do have one common denominator. We both like dope. In the streets and where I live and shot dope, white boys came to get their dope. So I had to remember, he couldn't have been too damn off. They'd bring their women with them to get their dope. You understand? So when I hear a Caucasian say to me, I'm an addict, I say, right on. Right on, because you done been to some of the places I done been. Now, I don't understand why I'm here doing this. I paid $20 for a ticket to go someplace else.
Watch out now. Watch out.
And had to give the ticket away.
Yeah, had to give it away.
Had to give it away. I've been told, if you can't give up of yourself to somebody else, then you can't keep this thing. See, I live good today. I live in an area, and it must be God trying to, he's going to do with me what he want to do with me, because I live in an area where there are white people, there are Chinese people, there's Asian people. I own a home, they own their home. And I look around and I say, well, Ronnie, you can't afford to be prejudiced. But it's always that little boy in me that remember how they treated me. I want to hate my mama because she couldn't do no better. But I never went without, because she did what she had to do. I used to watch my sister bring home tricks. She never discriminated. It was nothing for me to come in the damn house and see a white man laying in her bed. Chinese man, black man, African man, didn't make her no damn difference. What I'm talking about, I grew up in an environment that was dangerous for a person like me, because I didn't have what it took to understand what was going on. So I adapted to the lifestyle. I'm trying to tell you, I was brought up in that environment. I had to survive. My mother couldn't do anything with me at the age of 10 years old. I did for myself. I abused all women prior, very young age. Rape was unheard of for me. If you winked, you wanted it. If you said no, you was only playing. White women, white girl, didn't make no difference. I didn't know how to treat people. What I found out, man, if I treat you with respect, I'm going to get some respect. That other shit, I ain't got time for no more. And I ain't perfect in that area, because I still call women bees at times. And I still get humble sometimes and go beyond the call of duty and help somebody. But I know I suffer from a disease. And if I'm not careful, that will kick me into shooting some dope. You see, that's what I'm talking about. I shot brown dope, white dope, pink dope, yellow dope. I didn't give a damn what kind of dope it was. If I put some fire to it and it balled up and cleared up, I'm shooting it up. I never cared. I never cared. A friend of mine asked me, man, what happens if your daughter married a white man? I said, as long as he treats her like respect, I'm all right with it. But saying that on one hand and praying that she don't on the other hand, you understand?
Yeah.
I'm talking about putting myself in a situation that I might maybe be able to handle. But unity, this room, is for all of us on one path. We trying to stay clean. I have yet to go anywhere and meet an addict of any race and not be able to communicate. Not to be able to feel that we got something in common. And I'm the type, a lot of times I say things off the top of my head, but I always like to joke around. And I tell them, it don't make no difference, man. When you roll up red in that hype, and I hit that damn hype, if we put the blood together, you don't know whose blood it is. You understand what I'm talking about? I can't come in here and tell you I haven't changed. That's a lie. I have changed in that particular area. It ain't no flash of lightning. But I've changed because of the way I feel about situations. I'm willing to help somebody. Any addict suffering can get my help. Anybody that think he's not an addict and ask me, what do I do? Where do I go? I hear your story. You don't do it no more. I say, but for the grace of God.
But for the grace.
You see, because if I start stigmatizing myself again and shut you people off, I'm doomed to repeat that whole thing. That whole thing. Because, see, I went around in denial. I am not prejudiced. I am not. And deep down, I'm telling you, I struggle with that thing. But that monster has not risen his head to the point where I want to do bodily harm. Why I want to disrespect you. Because I know for a person like me, only through God's grace and mercy, through coming through Narcotics Anonymous, being amongst all of you people, and seeing that this thing works. And it ain't no such thing as all the white on one side and all the black on the other side and put the Chinese down the middle. You understand? I don't go in a meeting or come in a room and sit next to you and you move. I don't see that. What I see is that I'm going to work with this prejudice thing. I'm going to sit here next to this brother or this sister, and I'm going to hold still if I don't do nothing else. See, this ain't nothing but a setup. An old friend of mine always tells us that. Yeah. He said, this ain't nothing but a setup. Oh, that's just, you get messed up, this is the setup. You can get with it, make some decisions, work some nutritions, work some steps, work some spiritual principles. All these things come in play. I'm in a position where I got to practice these principles whether I like it or not. If I opt to shoot some more dope, then that's on me. I cannot go back and tell my buddies I shot some dope because the white dude was talking to my wife. Or that white boy hugged my woman. See, I came in here sick like that. If you hug my woman, I'm going to hug yours. That's right, spite. Spite. Walk in a meeting, want to be arrogant. Step back, y'all. Y'all ain't got nothing to say. I'm talking about not only prejudice to white people. I'm talking about y'all. My own people. I don't like you. I don't like the way you look. I don't like what you said. I look at her and tell her, yeah, you look all right. Just to make you mad. And he's sitting there looking at me. You know? Then I'm saying to myself, you're sick, Ronnie. You real sick. You done put down dope for this insane shit now. You done going to meet and looking at people, what religion you? You know? What's up with you, man? You done took your shit a whole nother level. See, I'm talking about a monster that can grow into something beyond your imagination. I'm thinking one thing and acting another way. All I know is this. I get help from Narcotics Anonymous from anybody, whether I like you or not. And that's the kicker. Because, see, if I didn't like you, I'd let you know and I'd cut you off. I've had too many people in here to tell me, Ronnie, you can't afford to make no enemies. You can't afford to cut nobody off because you don't know where your help coming from. I sit in some meetings today and hear some white people share. I said, God dang on. Well, that boy got it going on. What if I'd have been in my little world? Oh, man, I'm going to hear what he got to say. He lying. He ain't talking about us. But when I listen, I hear me. When I watch, I see me. And then I pray. For an addict like me, for the issues that I deal with, prayer is a powerful thing. It puts me in spaces that I don't want to be. It has me doing things I don't like to do. It has me treating people like I don't want to treat them. Hate them. And I've heard, if you hate, you get hate. Can you handle it? Ronnie, you play a part in your recovery. Not in Narcotics Anonymous, but as well as outside Narcotics Anonymous. See, I can't love you. I can't hug you and go to work and find somebody like you and crush them. See? That's how I used to be. I see it. Don't make me mad. What I'm talking about is the disease of addiction. The disease of addiction has no color barrier, has no race tone. Dope will kill anybody. Anybody, and make anybody do anything. I remember being in Miami, going back to D.C., and I walked into the airport, and the young lady and I, Caucasian and praising. She said something smart to me. And I couldn't have had no more than I guess I had about 6 months. And what she said to me was something out of the ordinary. And I told her, I said, you know where I'm from? She said, I don't care. I said, well, let me tell you. I said, I'm from D.C. I said, the minute I get back home, I'm going to kill two of y'all. Sick. Sick. That's right. Sick. I'm telling you, I'm sitting here telling you something that I don't tell nobody. You want to know how prejudiced I was? And I say was. I'll threaten your whole family. I'm in Miami, and we was only arguing over peanuts. Told me to get to the back of the line, and I told her, well, I'm standing here too, my money just is good. And she looked at me and walked away. And the first thing popped in my head. Tell her that.
Yeah.
See if that affect her.
Yeah.
And she simply told me, get your ass out of Miami. You know, I put a little humor with this thing, and like I said, man, I was prejudiced. I thought I had every reason to be. What didn't happen in the past happened in the past. I'm not going to be a part of the shit that's getting ready to happen now. Now, if I can help somebody, anybody, I'm willing to do that. Ain't got no problem with that. But I do suffer from a lot of things. Abandonment issues, all these things. And at times, I don't see nothing but, I see colors. And I want to blame somebody. But being here 10 years clean, with the help of all you people in this room, I'm grateful. I appreciate it. I'm glad you hugged me. I'm glad you welcomed me in. Even with the issues that I suffer with. All I know is one thing. I like going to these meetings. I like being around you people. I don't want to shoot no more dope. I don't want to smoke no more crack. Don't want to pimp no more women, and I pimp them all that I can come in contact with. And today I'm a better man, a better husband, a better grandfather, because I'm willing to share my experience, strength, and hope with not only y'all and tell you the truth, exactly where I'm at, to the best of my ability, but my grandkids. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks a lot, Ronnie. Now we're going to hear from Paul M. from South Potomac.
Good night, my name's Paul.
Paul.
But for God's sweet divine grace, I haven't found it necessary to smoke any crack or any marijuana or drink any alcohol since April the 14th, 1990. I got 14 years and 2 days. That's 5,017 days in a row. And I know why they asked me to do this sorry ass topic. Yeah. So sick of being picked on just because I like to share. Sorry. I'm hungry, and I've been working in the indigent room all day, so I'm a little batty right now. So everything I share, you just got to deal with. Yeah. But I know why they asked me to share, you know, picking on me. Because before coming to Narcotics Anonymous, I had a few bad experiences. And I when they say prejudice, they're not just speaking. I'm not going to just speak on, you know, the obvious, you know, because I'm so attractive and you don't like yourself. That's the obvious. No, seriously, the white and the black, because y'all still separating in Narcotics Anonymous. Okay, so let's get that lie out of the way, you know, funky motherfucker. All right, that's what prejudice is. It's a hatred, it's a dislike, it's a discord, it's an abyss of sordid stain experiences traveling through time. It's a way that you trap yourself and punish other people because you are unhappy with a few bad experiences. All right, now that y'all are quiet. I've been to a lot of conventions. And I bring my stuff with me. This is my spiritual reflection that lets me know that I'm involved. I'm participating. Because before coming to this process of Narcotics Anonymous, I had no evidence, tangible evidence, that would show you in the simplest form about my appreciation and participation. So, I would wear it, but, you know, shit getting heavy now. So, I love you, man. So, I was smoking crack. I started smoking reefer about 13, 14 years ago. I liked it, reefer. And I drank a lot. That's how I got to the program. But the emotional baggage that I brought to this process started long before I smoked a reefer or drank any alcohol. Long before I knew what racism, prejudice was, you know, I really didn't have a problem in my early years, because I was born in Jersey. But I quickly discovered some stuff out. You know, I learned to hate people because I ain't have nothing. And I pretty much started not liking the way I was living because we lived in brownstones and projects. And we had to eat welfare food. And a lot of times the ceiling and stuff in the house would fall off into the cereal box. And Frosty Flakes looks like paint chip chippings. If you got a lot of sugar and milk on them, you ain't going to recognize it right away anyway. But if you hungry, you ain't going to spit it out. That when our commode went back up, and it's only one commode, a toilet commode, went back up, we had to go downstairs to the neighbor's house just to take a dookie. But I remember, like, I was about 4 or 5, and I couldn't make it downstairs. So I scooped the dookie out the toilet, threw it out the window. But because I was only 4 or 5, I didn't know that there was a fire escape out the window. And I threw the dookie out the window. Well, the dookie landed out there and it stayed out there. And the people lived over top of me were you know, kindly enough to express to my mother how sorry her child is throwing shit out the window. So my mother was so embarrassed that, you know, right then and there, I realized it's you know, this is a real different thing. And where we lived at, because of the place that we lived and everything, everybody knew instantly. And they started calling me Dookie Boy. Well, that shit changed 20-some years later. I'm smoking crack, and I'm dookieing on myself, and I end up in treatment, and they're calling me Dookie Boy again. Now, what's the difference in the Dookie story and prejudice is that it ain't hurt. See, prejudice hurts because it cuts into a fabric of your existence. Because I was jumped on a school bus by 11 white people, I began to think that I hated white people. Because the bus driver wouldn't stop, I thought I hated white people. Because I moved from Jersey City to North Carolina, and because of my proper accent, I was jumped on by country people. So I hated people from North Carolina. Moved from North Carolina to Washington, D.C., and got jumped in the parking lot. I mean, football field for catching a football, so I started hating people from D.C. See, hate is something that moves through time at a standstill pace. You keep the same feeling and you grow with it like a resentment. And it's like a fire. Because every time something, minute or large, hit it, it becomes combustible and it explodes. It ignites. It leaks. And it begins to separate you from your social skills. Yeah. See, now, I ain't never really did it with no white women. I wasn't even looking for it. Shit just don't do nothing for me. That's what I'm thinking. But, you know, I've been clean a little while now. Y'all starting to look kind of good. Just saying, I can look at you. You know, the water changing. Y'all getting a little butt on you and everything, you know. I mean, it is what it is. Man know what I'm talking about. But, you know, when you think you hate something, you begin to develop a belief system. And once you start believing that, you start losing trust in what's right. You start losing trust in what's good. And then you begin to seek out ways to make sure that your belief is right. So that's what I did. When I was in the Navy, I hurt a lot of people. Black and white. When I was young, I did a lot of things. I don't like them. I don't even share about them in meetings because they're ugly. It points out how ruthless and how empty my life was, how painful my development as a young man into a young adult, how empty and shallow I had to become just to deal with one day. I remember when my grandmother was, my family was in a church van, and it was crushed by a drunk driver. My grandmother was beheaded. Her best friend was killed. My brother was shaved like a potato. My father had 1/3 of the bones in his body crushed. My grandfather had 2/3 of the bones in his body crushed. My niece had to have a pin put in her leg. My sister-in-law was in the hospital because she was carrying my nephew. 14 members of my family ended up in the hospital, and 2 went to the morgue. And I was in the Navy, and it took them 6 days to find me. And by the time I got to the United States, the funeral was over. Everybody was gone. I right then stopped believing in God and began to hate in God. So everything that I disliked caught a lot of pain from me. My selfishness with people, with women, I would sleep with my brother's people. I would sleep with my best friend's people. It was easy to sleep with my family members. Excuse me, I gotta get rid of this. Hold up. I got something, y'all. I might need it later. Hold up. So, when they finally sent me to the United States, the little boat I was on, I was a hardworking person. I had already achieved a great status there, you know. I was not just like the average black dude on the boat. The captain and them liked me because I was a show off. That's what the hell I was. I was ego based, cocky, arrogant, you know. And then on top of that, I test well. So that means I was reasonably intelligent. I was not to be fucked with. Yeah. Because then I went to the other part of that and I started taking those trainings where they taught you how to hurt people. But they call it self-defense. Yeah. Combat tactics. But for real, for me, it was how could I hit you or hurt you and then move away where you can't see it's me. They taught me how to sneak and hurt people physically. And I had already been doing that emotionally. I had already been sneaking in behind my brother and doing this girl. I had already been sleeping with my best friends. I had already been jumping out of windows. So I already knew how to do the sneak shit. So it was easy for me to learn that stuff. And what I started to do was every time great deals of pain. I know now today I didn't like the feeling and I wanted to feel different. And because I was in so much hurt and emptiness and so shallow, it was easy to hurt people. Because when you don't care about you, don't care about nothing. When there's no interest in you, there's no interest in something or someone or something or somebody. It's kind of hard to tell your mother you love her when you just lost her first house that she was dependent upon. That she had already begun to tell her friends that my boy bought me a house. And now you gotta go tell him that you can't live there. See, when they sent me back from that funeral, it took them 24 hours to contact me, and it took them, and they only gave me 19 days of leave. But check this out. It only took them 18 hours to send me back to fucking Beirut. So, you know, when I landed on that boat out there in that damn Mediterranean, I was full of everything. I had reefer, I had coke, you know, I was in self-destruct mode straight to the utmost. Because the hate and the pain was so devastating that when I went there, it was nobody at the house. Everybody was either at funeral, at the hospital or gone on back to their homes. It was nobody there for me to see. I couldn't see my grandmother's sisters. I couldn't see my cousins. I ain't seen none of my aunts that I hadn't seen since I was a child. I didn't see none of the Indian people that traveled all the way from up in North Dakota to come to their aunts and their sisters and their great niece. I got an aunt that's an Indian that's 125 years old. I ain't get to see her. So by the time I got back there, it was them motherfuckers. White ass motherfuckers. Sorry ass motherfuckers. Everything like that. And I put God in that package too. That's when I think I was destined to come here. Because every day, if I wasn't drinking it, I was smoking it. Now, how you drink damn 2% alcohol and have to throw up? I was sucking that stuff down, Jack. I couldn't hold eggs. Diarrhea, they call it dysentery. But I was shitting all over myself. I couldn't even make it to the bathroom. Grown ass man. So what I did was I began to hurt people. And it didn't really matter. You know, and the things that I was doing, I felt all right with it. So when I got kicked out of the Navy, I ended up, you know, coming back to Washington, and I had lost my house in Washington as a direct result of that. So I just started traveling around. It didn't make sense to stay there anymore. And I ended up in North Carolina, and I don't know, man. I hit a bottom, and I said I had to go. Because I didn't want to do the molestation bit thing no more. I didn't want to be ugly no more. I just didn't want to be there. And I ended up coming back here and Alexandria. No, Clinton. And being out here in Clinton, Maryland, and, you know, then getting married and I was doing fine until I smoked that crack. I really was. I mean, I could smoke reefer like one day, go to work, you know, and it could stay there. It could be sitting there. I mean, you know, I could do that. I could, you know, I didn't have to budget it in my account. You know? But I smoked that crack. Oh, my father, thee. And this process is threefold. All right? It's a physical, it's a mental, it's a spiritual. It's you, it's me, it's God, it's the steps, it's the tradition, it's proper exercise, dieting, and rest. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. Learning, commitment, service. So for me to get in this process banged up like I was, knowing how much I hated crack. See, that's the only reason I made it in Narcotics Anonymous. That's the only reason that the pain, the hurt, the shame, the emptiness, the superficial arrogance. That's the only reason I made it in Narcotics Anonymous. I said, that's right, made it. You don't like it? Read the book. I found my bitter end in Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't get it in church. I'm anointed. I've been blessed. My mama was a preacher. My grandfather was a preacher. I've been rubbed down, Jack. I know that I'm good. Ain't do me no good. I still hated people. People. It ain't had nothing to do with what color you were. I ain't like you because of the way you might even looked at me. I've been fired off of jobs just because the way I dress or the way I look or the way I walk. Because I don't want to talk to you like such a, you know what I mean? Stand around doing this all day. Because I don't want to do that. Because I don't want to look like you. I got 5 pair of jeans, maybe 3 pair of sweats. You think I'm dressed up? This is old shit, okay? I can't afford to buy the shit I want all the time. I like to be clean. When you prejudice, you funky. Mm. when you hate somebody just because they do something that you can't do, because they're willing to go somewhere inside themselves because you're not willing. I did the same thing. I ended up in a bunch of white meetings when I got clean too in AA, because my first sponsor was AA. But the wonderful thing about it, all of my experiences in spiritual growth and moving through emotional rackophobia comes from pain, comes from emptiness, absence, and loneliness. My spiritual challenge comes to me because I don't have the strength inside me to persevere with my higher power. I ain't like y'all. Some of y'all can go with days with not having sex. Some of y'all can go days with not doing things wrong, months. Some of y'all can look around and y'all, I'm going to tell you, I'm really good with relationships because I don't expect nothing from you because I ain't giving you nothing. Why should I let you hurt me because I'm not spiritually developed to really care? I don't have enough humankind in me to move past the fact that I really need you. So when I tell you I love you, you better know it. Because I don't hug people that I don't like. I'm not like you. I'm not going to walk up and talk about fake it till you make it. Fuck that. You're not rubbing me because I've been violated. I've been molested. I've been raped. I've been whooped. I've been beat. I'm not going to allow you to rub me when I'm working on trying not to be ugly no more. I can't stand the fact that I hated people the way I hated them. That I hurt them the way I hurt them. You can't be so small on the inside that nobody can reach any. If you want something from God, you got to give. You want something from Narcotics Anonymous, you got to give. You got to stop separating in here. You got to take a chance. It's real disgusting that somebody don't like me. I got 13 years and 2 months of straight service, and somebody got a nerve to be questioning my commitment level. You motherfucker. I'm here to save my life so I don't smoke no more crack. Don't be talking about how much service I can do. You don't know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the fact that if I smoke crack again, I'm hurting somebody. I'm going to rob some churches. I'm going to rob some NA meetings. And I'm going to take some money. And ain't nothing y'all going to do about it. Because that's how filthy I am on the inside. Because see, when I lay down at night, I had dreams about my family being killed in a car accident because of the emptiness inside me, just so I could have some money. People all the time, you ought to be a preacher. I don't want to be a preacher. Okay? I don't want to be a preacher. I don't want to be a preacher, okay? Because I don't want to have sex with none of the congregation. I don't want to steal the goddamn money. You understand? I don't want to drive the damn Cadillac off the road. Take it for what it's worth. I'm just telling you where I'm at. I ain't cleaned up enough. I ain't gonna go tell you how saved I am just so you can appreciate the fact that my mama was a preacher and I know a little bit about the Bible. I told you he was about to use that thing. You thought I was joking, didn't you? And my God already understands that. That's why I'm in Narcotics Anonymous. Because if I'm going to help anything, save anything, move towards any kind of spiritual incline, it's going to have to be with one of y'all first. Because when I got raped by them gay guys, they told me, when I got my ass all cracked up, balls stretched down, mouth cracked, lip ribs cracked, laying in a hospital for 25 days. Yeah. Now, I hate gay people, but my cousin gay. So I get in Narcotics Anonymous. I don't like white people. I don't like black people. I don't like gay people. I don't like women that trick and lead their kids. Yeah, funky motherfuckers. Yeah. Yeah. That's how filthy I am on the inside. Right? So I can't hear nothing. So I use again. And this time, you know what happened, right? I go to the bitter end. So my sponsor recognized when I got in this program, I got induced to my first sponsor, July 29th, 1990, because I was wrestling with my sister and I flipped her and I felt like I wanted to do it. And I ran to a meeting and it was an all white meeting, three people in there. And you know how everybody in NA do. This too shall pass. Keep coming back. More will be revealed. No, it was an A meeting, you know, think, but for the grace. I said, if one more of them motherfuckers come up to me with one of them things, I'm going to let them have it. And what happened was a lady introduced me to my sponsor. And first thing he said was, you and I must be the only two black guys that got incest issues. And then the both of them crack up laughing. And from that day to this day, God has been vehicling you people with your experiences of your therapeutic value as the ultimate weapon. Coming inside me, moving and changing me in ways that I never thought I would be able to do. Because now I can hold men and kiss them. I can hold. And look, I'm telling you right now, I'm kind of open. I'm probably a little further than I should be with this, right? But I get tired of people telling me what kind of intimate connection I should draw with my personal experience. You can't tell me why I should love you, man. You can't tell me why I should not. You can't tell me that. You can't tell me why I kiss who I want to kiss. I let who what I want to rub my ass. It don't make me gay. Yeah. It make me happy with me. You know how hard it is? Do you know how hard it is just to want to like somebody when you hate them? So you can genuinely pass a kinship? A token, a gesture, so that you can fellowship. I tell you, my newest friendship is with my man Tim right there. I met him about 30 days ago. White dude, he cool as shit. You know what I mean? But I'm going to tell you how sweet God is. I know I'm way past this 5-minute part. Cut the tape off. This shit is Narcotics Anonymous. I'm going to share it now. Look. If you hate something, watch how many times you get to practice with it. You know how you say, I hate to hear him share. And every time you turn around, there's Sherry. You know, I hate that car. Every time you turn around, it's a car like that right there. Or that bitch thinks she cute. And she keep getting fly stuff and you can't get it? Huh? And I'm going to tell you something else y'all need to stop saying. It's hard for any addict to be in Narcotics Anonymous. It has no gender here. If you're a gay woman, a straight woman, a black man, white man, any of that. It's hard. All that old bullshit is hard for women to stay clean. Okay. Everybody in here having sex. Okay? You're just at your point where you ain't doing it no more. You settled down and got married. You ain't jumping around no more. But check your story. You was doing more than finger popping? And then you're going to be mad at some newcomer because they can't control themselves. They on coffee and shit, they'll come off that crack. Crack dry you up. They salivating in areas now. It's warm. And what you telling them is they're wrong. How many times you got rid of somebody because they corrected you the wrong way? How many times you listen to them? Shit. All you did was draw a bigger hole of emptiness for that newcomer to lose their space in here. How many times y'all gonna sit in here and judge somebody because you think they should be on step four now because they got 5 years and you don't know how painful they are? And then you're going to get mad at an old timer because I got 14 years. And I got 30 some years of sex. Tell me where that shit match up at. I like the rock, Jack. You understand? Don't play with me. Don't mess with me. I done told you. Don't do it. You want to stay spiritual? Keep your drawers on and leave me alone. Because I will hit you off. Leave me alone. Okay, and you think I'm not scared to share on your ass too, okay? Don't call my house thinking that you're doing a therapeutic value and tell my wife that I'm sleeping with somebody. No, sir. Because for real, I just told you, I can go back into that self-absorbed self and say, man, a dime a dozen. I can get there. And I'll live in that emptiness because I think the obsession in the thinking. Yeah. So don't worry about my behavior. I'm grown. My pastor know about me. He know I'm a freak. Okay? So y'all got my story, right? I dare you to check yours and see how much of it in there that you could change in yours. I dare you. I dare you to reach down one time and do something for somebody else and don't worry about nobody knowing about it. I dare you to go to a white man or white woman or anybody and begin to love them and nurture them the way you would somebody that you used to run with. I dare you to get in service with somebody else that says... I dare you. I just dare you to get there and persevere and through the adversity with them. I dare you. All right, so look. If anybody think that I offended them, let me just clear this up right now. I am not in hate at all. I don't use, prejudice is ugly. I don't use that. Okay? Now, spiritually, I am learning and loving more than I have ever in my whole life. If I, a black man, can give my newborn son, who has 40% of his hearing, to a obese white woman, leave him in her care, God has done something. Okay, if I can drop my kids off in an all-white environment, knowing that they just told him that he's the brown Joshua and gave his ethnic background to a Crayola box and call him the brown Joshua after I selected his name in spiritual vision, you know, I went straight to the school. But you people in Narcotics Anonymous done created somebody. Yeah. Guess what you did? Yeah. All them years y'all been hugging me, all them conventions I've been on the HUD squad, hugging all these people, it done rubbed off. Because the hate went away and I went up there to correct her so that she could have the
balance to be an educator to youth.
So she could teach across the broad span, not just to that little classroom.
Yeah.
I showed her how my son is not a Crayola crayon ethnically colored, because there is not a white crayon in the 120 some colors in Crayola crayon. So I said, deal with that. I said, if you got a problem with it, here's my license. I'm certified by the state of Maryland to do prevention and intervention and education. I will be over here, and you don't want that. So I'm broke, and I love you all. We each are indebted to help someone like someone first helped us or me. If we're ever so indebted, if we're ever so remindful of that, we stand a chance of doing with Narcotics Anonymous vision. The message is hope. The promise is freedom. Lost dreams do awaken, but only if you give freely. Free don't mean I'm supposed to tell on you so I can be happy with me. Free mean I love you, I care for you. This is not the way I want us to be. Let's figure it out. Thanks for letting me share.